This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 107. Brought to you in association with Blue Motor Finance, Capital.com and Smart Pension. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Paul Riseborough, Chief Commercial Officer at Metrobank, to discuss the vital topic of the interface between physical and digital banking. I've always had a soft spot for Metrobank, if not perhaps their rather gaudy colour scheme. The first reason being that they were the first high street bank to open in the UK for a gazillion years, and I do love a good contrarian. The second is that great quote by their founder, Vernon Hill, which is that if he'd known beforehand how hard it is to open a bank in the UK, he wouldn't have bothered. I've largely given up reading stuff. There's too much stuff around these days, and too much stuff is just fluff. But somehow, by the mere act of absorption from the atmosphere, I'm sure that I've heard that it's all over for high street banks, and that the major banks are packing up and going home, or rather going virtual and digital, such that my nearest branch will soon be in Dunkirk. Which makes me feel very sorry for poor old Metrobank, or rather poor new Metrobank, perhaps. Are they the King Canute standing proud as the tide changes and they fail to change it? Or do they know something we don't? Who better to speak to than Paul, a main board director at Metrobank? As I'm still, for my sins, writing about corporate governance, I know that these listed folks have inches of papers for board meetings these days, or should that be an inbox full of PDFs? Maybe somewhere in these stacks is the secret to why they're not crazy but are onto something. Paul promised to spill all the beans about why bricks are far from over and out, and how combining physical and digital can lead to a competitive advantage. If true, I should get more bricks for LFP towers and stop being so ethereal myself. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi, Paul. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here.
So, it's a nice hot week in London, which is very rare, and we've all been suffering on the transport one way or another. And apart from suffering on transport in rare hot weather, what have you been up to these days? Not to do with FS. We can talk about your day job in a minute.
Yeah, so I'm quite busy at the moment. I'm a trustee for a charity, Making the Leap. Helps young people prepare for the world of work. So do some stuff with those guys, which is very interesting indeed. And then I've also just become a fellow at the Aspen Institute in the States, Finance Leaders Fellow, as they call it. I was lucky enough to be chosen from 22 people around the world, and it connects finance to sort of social purpose. So I'm going to be setting up a venture to do that in the UK as part of that fellowship. So I'm thinking about what I'm going to do.
Oh, cool. And heard of Aspen before, I'm not sure where. Maybe it was because I looked at your CV on LinkedIn a few months ago and promptly forgot it was your CV, but I'm sure I've heard it somewhere else. So what is Aspen per se?
Yeah, it was set up after the war. It's a sort of classic liberal think tank community in the States, perhaps a little bit like the Brookings Institution, I guess. It's bipartisan, and it sort of believes that it was set up after the war to say, how do we ensure we don't have another war? So it kind of tackles the big issues of our time, you know, equality, urban regeneration, some aspects of foreign affairs, immigration, all these kind of big challenges of the 21st century and the 20th century as it was then. So the purpose of the Finance Leaders Fellowship is to get finance leaders together and say, you know, if you look at the world of finance, it's maybe got a bit financialized and left a load of people behind. And how can we connect finance back to society and the people that actually, you know, finance is supposed to serve?
Yes, absolutely. The whole world has got very financialized, including the city. Over a coffee before coming here this morning, I was reading a 1926 book about John Company, about the East India Company, which features large for some strange reason in my book on corporate governance and how to manage a small cave board. And it was first living in Philpot Lane, which is next to Kleinwort's, where I walked down Philpot Lane for about 15 years. And Philpot Lane has changed, the author said, in 1926. And in 1926, Philpot Lane was something like wine merchants, fruit merchants, you know, yardy, yardy, yardy. The city, even as recently as 1920s, was full of non-financial stuff. Whereas by my time, when I started walking down Philpot Lane in 1985, the city was full of financial stuff and nothing else.
I think you're onto something there, which is that, you know, we'll get onto it, but I think, you know, when we set up Metrobank, it was very much around ensuring that we were sort of part of a high street and part of a community that we were, you know, actually trying to serve.
Yes, so we will get onto Metrobank in a microsecond. And when you were young, did you have dreams of one day being the chief commercial officer at a firm which we founded called Metrobank many decades in the future, or did sort of one thing lead to another?
No, I absolutely did not. I wanted to be a world-class tennis player, but I ended up just being a tennis player, not world-class.
How classy did you get?
You know, I was kind of edging county standard, I suppose, you know, getting close, you know, that kind of area. But my brother was much better than me, I have to confess. So, yeah, then I thought, well, I better study. I did my did the usual route, you know, university, and ended up really interesting working for somebody called Lord Stevenson, Dennis Stevenson of Codnam, in the House of Lords. And he had a really interesting job across chairman of HBOS and also chairman of Pearson, which is something that back then was Penguin and Economist and FT and things like that. And I used to be his bag carrier, really, his sort of assistant. And it was from there that I ended up, you know, interviewing for a job in banking proper, and the rest is, you know, history, I guess.
So I didn't mention, but CCO here encompasses digital. Did you come up the kind of banker route who then sort of learnt how to play with computers, or did you come up the sort of tech route as somebody who learnt how to play with computers and then banking, or did you do them both simultaneously somehow?
I think probably, to be fair, I was probably more of a product guy, actually. And products has always had quite a strong interface with digital, so my background was always in things like current accounts and designing new products. And as digital has grown in resonance, then clearly we invest a lot of our time thinking about that.
And I think you said you joined Metro Bank in 2011?
2011, yeah. We opened the doors in 2010, so fairly early on. Yeah.
For those people who haven't heard of you, as most of the audience is overseas, do you want to give us a little sort of thumbnail sketch of Metro Bank? And we were talking earlier about the fact that back in the day, you guys used to just kind of concentrate on the deposit side and then just sort of bung the rest of the assets in stuff like, I don't know, Zopa loans you're doing now or something. But now you've moved on from that model.
Yeah, so we have 56 stores, as we call them, and we can get onto that later. But, you know, we don't call them branches. They're very big. They're often on corners, prime sites, open 7 days a week. The whole ethos of Metro is a service and convenience ethos. You know, that can sound a bit like elevator music, but we believe very strongly that actually, you know, we provide tangible service benefits when you come in, whether that's safe deposit boxes, whether that's coin counting, whether that's drive-through stores. We're all set up to really help people. We're approaching 1.5 million customers now. We're a full-service bank, unlike many of the challengers, so we look after retail customers, private banking customers, business customers, and right up to large corporates and commercial customers as well. And as you were saying, yeah, we've got a very active lending arm now, residential mortgages, commercial lending, and deposits are a big focus for the bank as well. We're a very stable bank. We only lend out around about £8-9 of every £10 we get in deposits, so we don't access wholesale funding like some of our competitors. And the whole model and our whole culture, which is at the heartbeat of Metro, is about ensuring that we're not there to flog you stuff. We're there to serve you in the best way that we can across any channel that you happen to call, click on, or walk into.
Yes, so going back to the old days, 1926, actually, I think it was before Captain Mannering, but the spirit of that is kind of twofold. As we'll come on, it's the sort of the very modern digital spirit, but also there's a kind of old-fashioned spirit about the Captain Mannering, you know, branch manager who would actually try and look after his people.
Yeah, so we'll have a local director, we call them, in every store. And it is their job to get to know the community. I mean, you know, I don't know whether it's old-fashioned or whether it's actually just the right, which is that, you know, actually you need to have people in your branches, in your stores, that understand the local community of which they are part. You know, a local director will understand whether a local business is right to lend to, because they'll walk up and down that high street every day and understand that business. And we think that kind of level of connection is now quite rare. And that's actually one of our USPs.
Absolutely, that's a nice contrarian thing in itself. I mean, as you know, the tech world is full of people who say, oh, the computer will do everything, and the computer will do lots of things, but it can never quite do everything. And at a certain level of granularity, as you say, that kind of information is useful. I happened to see in the news this morning that some statistic, unsurprisingly, as these days when you go to GPs, you tend on sort of the NHS to see random person every time. But the statistics show that if you see the same doctor most times, every time, you're less likely to die.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
yeah. I didn't quite understand that headline, because presumably less likely to die means less than 100%. But maybe I misunderstood statistics, which wouldn't be the first time. So moving on to the overall topic then of physical banking versus digital banking, or physical banking and digital banking and this kind of thing. You mentioned you've got 56 branches, and I think that's one of the things that I glossed over in the intro. I don't know how many branches the average of the big four have got out there, but I'd assume it's thousands.
It is, yeah, thousands, like yeah.
So the first thing is that, if for the sake of argument, I don't know, picks a name out at random, Lloyds Bank is closing branches this week. It's closing them from the perspective of having tens of thousands in the first place, and I don't think any of them are heading for zero. It would be quite a shock if they did. So how do you see sort of physical banking as a whole?
Yeah, so I think we're in this horrible sort of period now where the big banks are closing a load of branches from that were, you know, poorly positioned and never opened, and, you know, beige and full of colleagues that were trying to flog you stuff. They're in this horrible kind of process of retrenchment. We think for the whole of the UK, we'll probably do about 200-250 stores. The difference with the Metro store, this isn't an advert for Metro, but the difference is that they're always open. So actually the productivity you get out of a Metro store is worth, you know, 2, 3, 4 typical bank branches from some of our competitors. They tend to be open when people are free as well, so open in the evenings, open at weekends, when people want to do stuff. So anywhere up to 30%, for example, of our business accounts will be opened at weekends and in the evenings, because when you think about it, that's when sort of business people are free. So to answer the question, we're going through this horrible churn period at the moment where a lot of communities are going to lose their, you know, their last branch in town. That has real social consequences. Our view, though, is actually it's better to have hub stores that are open. And we think with around 250, we can kind of cover, you know, most areas of the UK within, you know, within a few miles radius. But some of the big banks have, we did a piece of research around about sort of 0.6 miles between branches of the same bank group. You know, so in some areas, there is definitely, you know, the portfolios are too big of these properties. And that's because banks have taken over other brands and merged and, you know, acquired people. So it's all a bit of a mess. But of course, it's going to be a really painful process, because as they close down these branches, there are going to be communities that are left without a nearby branch. And as I say, that does have real consequences, which you can come onto.
Yes. And I'm talking about Philpot Lane in the 1980s and old-fashioned banking, it occurred to me that when I were a lad, I'd have to pop out at lunchtime to go to NatWest with a cheque, if I'd unfortunately got a cheque, and I'd stand in some bloody long queue with everybody else who was queuing at exactly the same time, and that was the only thing that you would do. And there were very nice, old-fashioned, huge, wonderful architectured buildings at the time, but it was pretty tedious, and of course there was no concept in those days. And again, in terms of just deconstructing some of the froth and fluff about the wonders of the virtual world, I'm sure we've all had experience with tech support or maybe a bad online bank or whatever, or insurance claim or something, where, you know, it's all outsourced a long way away and you're sitting on the bloody phone for an hour and all that kind of stuff. So to that extent, when virtual support isn't done very well, it'd be just so much bloody easier just to go and pop into somewhere on a Saturday morning when you're doing after your shopping at Sainsbury's and go, oh, look, I've got a check, or I've got a problem with my check, or whatever, and get it actually just sort of sorted out there, because that would just be sort of better.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would say is, you know, those everyday transactions that you used to have to go to the branch for, they are migrating wholesale to digital. But I think it's a sort of failure of imagination.
I mean, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah, but I guess I think it's a bit of a failure, failure of imagination to think that a branch is only there to do transactions.
My imagination always fails me, Paul, so it's definitely a failure of imagination.
But, you know, in our experience, it's to have a conversation with, you know, a business owner that's thinking about financing their growth, or a young person that maybe is really unsure about their first mortgage, or actually doesn't really understand how a credit card works. You know, so that kind of level of connection and empathy and planning and understanding comes from face-to-face interactions. You can try and recreate that digitally. But I think it's about stores and branches changing their focus to make sure that they're doing that stuff, rather than going, we're going to make you come into the store or the branch to do something that you really want to do on your mobile phone. So it's really, really rethinking what a branch is for, I think.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, I was just thinking of a couple of experiences I had. I mean, I'm sure there was some trivial thing on my Monzo card a little while ago. And in passing, I see talking to CTOs that their CTO has changed today, which I wasn't too surprised about, given the slow development, which I've mentioned before. And their chat service was quite good. But then equally, I had some nightmare with my host recently over HTTPS or some nonsense like that around my website. And I was on some support thing to people from Bulgaria. And it was days, man. You know, I was just so... it was doing my head in. I was like hitting the gin and tonics at 5:30 in the evening after a whole day of pinging backwards and forwards, and then saying, oh, it's not our plugin, it's someone else's plugin, and someone else saying it's not our plugin. Oh, you know, that was awful. And I know that's not banking, but there are times when actually just seeing a person face to face and saying, look, this is the problem, you show it to them, is actually more efficient than so-called virtual stuff.
I would agree. I mean, I think one of the things when you get into an entirely digital relationship with your bank, it's accountability and trust, isn't it? If you have something that you need sorted out, I mean, all the evidence, I mean, I could quote millions of stats at you around most people like to solve an issue face to face. Most people like to complain about something face to face, because there's that level of accountability and trust that you're taking me seriously, that I can see that you're dealing with it. And when you're emailing a web form or your, you know, a chatbot or whatever it is, that level of accountability doesn't feel, you know, hence the need for G&Ts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. And going back to my old incarnation of running global risk, you know, my job then was to imagine everything that could go wrong. It's not as pessimistic as it sounds, because not being a credit person, I didn't spend my whole life just imagining what can go wrong. I also spent half my life imagining what could go really right on the opposite side. But one thing that's always struck me that I don't think fintech per se has come across yet, which is the virtual nature of these apps and things. I mean, I'm not going to mention a name, but let's say for the sake of argument, app-only bank X has some kind of problem, which banks have once or twice in the past had problems. You know, when it was Northern Rock, people went and queued up outside Northern Rock. There was somewhere to go. You felt like you're doing something, queuing up. Emailing some app which has disappeared and something which is very virtual is a very different thing. So I think there's still, especially in extreme, there's some importance of tangibility.
Completely agree, yeah. There's a resilience point there. If one channel goes down, you have other channels. There's a community involvement piece. But yeah, there's a trust piece around ensuring that somebody can walk in and get access to their money if they want to get access to their money. And that's almost like a primeval instinct in people. Give me back what's mine.
Exactly. So anyway, so wearing your chief commercial hat, and as you were saying before, it's not so much about old-fashioned stuff like taking a check there anymore. There are these other things you're talking about. What kind of things is physical, as it were, sort of sexing up that makes sort of physical a bit more 21st century than Mike wandering with his check at lunchtime?
Yeah, so I think what, there's an interesting sort of trend going on in technology. It used to be that technology was very device-led, so it was in your smartphone or it was on your laptop. As that technology is changing, you know, everything from beacons to the Internet of Things, whatever it ends up being, we can create some really interesting experiences that blend the physical and digital together. So it may well be, we've just launched something where you can walk out trading, so you can open an account, have your debit card printed on the spot, and we'll hand you your merchant services device. You can trade and take card payments straight away. You can order a new card on your mobile phone and walk around the corner to one of our stores and print it off. So it's that relationship between physical and digital made possible by the sort of disaggregation of a lot of technology from devices that means that we can create these new propositions which tend to mean much more to customers because they're a little bit more tangible and they can achieve a lot more than if you're in an entirely sort of virtual world. And you're seeing it with some of the tech giants. So you're seeing it with, Amazon, your ability to walk out of a supermarket without queuing based on, various recognition and payments technology. You're seeing it even with, Starbucks, where you can order ahead and pick up your coffee if that's your brand of choice. I gather you're not a big Starbucks fan, is that fair?
No, I do actually like coffee, you see.
Yes, right, fair enough, yeah. So these kind of things are actually, you're seeing more and more brands, the very best brands. Look at Amazon, buying Whole Foods. You're looking at how they can blend the latest technology, whether it's, supply chain logistics technologies, to create better physical experiences for customers, getting closer to customers. So I think the great shame around some of the technologies that we're seeing is that they're leaving customers behind on that kind of tangible, high street element. For example, controversial statement, the best thing Monzo could do would be to open a store.
Excellent. Good idea. Well, you can tell Tom or I can tell Tom. But having had Ricky Knox from Tandem Bank on a few shows ago, he's actually done just that. And he happened to walk past Harrods Bank one day and he happened to buy it. Although that didn't really have so many sort of branches around. But equally, he was extolling, perhaps from a different side, I never really thought about this, is sort of stalagmites and stalactites in a way, sort of meeting in the middle, coming from the other side, which is that sort of just virtual is just virtual, and there's a benefit in having balance sheet and all these kind of banky things. If you're going to be a bank, you might as well be a bank, was his perspective. And I do like the theme that you're talking about, which is that, if I can sort of interpolate, that for some time phones came along and it didn't have many apps and not that many businesses used them very well. So that was almost like the first wave of, quotes, digital and new technology stuff and all that kind of thing. And before that, we had the wave around, dot-coms and Amazon and internet-nitty things on your computer. But actually, what you're talking about now, I kind of translate in my mind to kind of that all this new technology, as you say, can actually do stuff in reality. And we, as physical beings, still live in reality. We quite often want cards and all that kind of stuff. And so perhaps it's less that you guys are sort of King Canute and just didn't read your newspapers for 50 years and didn't realise that physical was sort of going out of fashion. But it's more a question that you're bringing this more 21st century approach to physical, which is that, look, it isn't just some old-fashioned thing where you queue up to deposit your cheque. There's all these sort of wonderful things you can do.
Exactly right. And we think, digital is a seamless enabler behind the scene that allows you to have, a better human interaction. So whether that's identifying yourself when you walk in the store, that should be automatic. rather than us having to ask you loads of details, et cetera, et cetera. Getting out of the way, the kind of process stuff that allows you to have a better interaction with the bank. And we're only really at the start of this. You know, technology is, I don't need to tell you, you run a podcast on it. Technology is evolving.
I don't know anything. I just pretend I do. That's my secret.
Evolving every hour. And the opportunities for us in our physical stores are just, you know, manifest. You know, whether that's accessing, you know, your safe deposit box without needing to be identified because we know you from biometrics, or whatever that ends up being. You know, we were looking at all these opportunities to make sure that the stores really sing for customers. And actually, they're a great place to go. And they're seen as a, you know, a community hub and resource. We have thousands of events. You know, what's probably not known about Metro is 1,000 events after hours.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, so, you know, whether it's charity events or networking events, the store is seen as a sort of public resource. And that just, when you mix that with the latest technology, we can do so much more for the communities that we're in. You know, we can make stuff happen.
Yes, that's very interesting about sort of a community focus. I mean, I do recall a couple of decades ago when I went to a Sri Lankan Buddhist monastery in Chiswick. I got sort of a bit bored, and in my spare time I did a degree in Buddhist studies to sort of to intersperse amongst the FS stuff. And I was, having read textbooks about Buddhism, that I was pretty amazed that the principal function of the Vihara, which actually is a monastery, the principal function was not so much sort of somewhere where the monks live and sit and do their meditation and chanting, but it was a community centre. There were, like, you know, young girls dancing and all the sort of Sri Lankan mums sitting around and chatting and all that kind of stuff. It was a focal point for the community, and of course in the UK, historically speaking, the church was a focal point. But it's a good point now, which is that communities by and large, and maybe this is something to do with your other interest of social mobility, communities by and large don't have a focal point. We have virtual focal points in terms of, I don't know, forums or Facebooks or Twitters or something like that, but that's turning out to be very polarizing. And I think I saw some tweet the other day from someone, intellectual dark web type person, saying that, you know, the amazing thing is you go online, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's something along that on the lines that you go on social media, you think everybody's terrible. You go out in the street and there's people being friendly and nice and normal. So, you know, there is a qualitative different experience by actually just hanging out in reality.
Digital isolation, screen addiction, we're at one of those kind of pivot points where people, you know, they like the benefits of technology, but actually some of the losses in terms of human interaction. And actually it matters, it shows up in the stats. So for example, you know, when a branch closes, lending growth to SMEs, for example, will drop about 60-65%. If it's the last branch in town, it will drop by 105%. Now, the interesting thing about that is everybody could log on and get a loan from one of the many loan providers digitally, but because they're not there on the high street, because they're not talking to people, because there's not that level of trust and familiarity, that stuff just simply melts away and, you know, SMEs go unsupported. So we intuitively know it to be true, but it's also, you know, statistically you can see that actually, you know, the demise of a lot of physical banking has real social costs.
That's very interesting. I mean, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, so I don't need to go over it in great length again, but two of the three of my sponsors who are doing incredibly well are doing incredibly well largely because they go all the way from having a super hot CTO doing some great digital stuff to actually sort of shoe leather in the real world where there's still human beings walking about doing stuff. So it's absolutely true, although it's by no means easy, as I'm sure you know from your day job, it's absolutely true that if you can do it well, if you can branch physical to digital, then, as it were, you're covering all the waterfront. It's not like, oh, we're taking half the waterfront and we're ignoring the other half. So, okay, good. Right, so that makes sense to me. And I think that, as always, the challenge is doing that well so you get a nice return on investment, and that's all about arithmetic. And just before we move on slightly, the thing that occurs to me, going back to these physical branches doing something more sexy, as well as the community staff and events and da-da-da-da-da, how do you as a bank kind of market that? Because I remember we mentioned Monzo. I remember when Tom was on, I think Christmas before last, he was saying that actually his concept isn't particularly a bank as such, but it was just so much easier to become a bank because you could tell everybody he's a bank, and rather than, you know, we're a sort of focus for your personal financial blah blah blah, and, you know, just keep waffling, there was a sort of a noun which journalists would recognise and all that kind of stuff. And you are a bank, which is just a fact and regulation, all that kind of stuff, and so bank is the appropriate noun. But when you say bank, or when you say high street bank, maybe it's just old folks like me, or maybe it's also the 20-somethings. I don't necessarily think sort of sexy place that's going to print out credit cards and have community events and do all these useful things. So insofar as your physical high street presence is qualitatively different from the others, how do you get that message over?
Yeah, so we've taken a very different course, which we don't believe in spending millions of pounds taking billboards and doing, you know, TV ads.
I think what you should do is spend millions of pounds on podcasts, actually.
Absolutely,
you get the best bang for your buck, I can assure you.
That is unquestionable, unquestionable. But what we've managed to get, you know, 80, 90% brand recognition in London through word of mouth, London, the South East. So what we've tended to do is rely on recommendations from people that have experienced our store experience. Yeah, around about 8, 9 out of 10 customers will open their personal current account in under 15 minutes in Metro, have their debit card printed, have their online banking set up, you know, have Apple Pay downloaded or Google Pay downloaded. So they walk out and they go, wow, that was amazing. I didn't think banks could do that. And then they'll go and tell 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people. And that's how we've grown. And actually they've attended a networking event or their charity could hire a room so they could have their board meeting. And that is what, you know, we go into thousands of schools a year doing outreach programs around, you know, how to balance a budget and what a bank does, etc. This stuff matters. It's hard yards. It's, you know, it's real investment. But that is our marketing. It's a people-to-people thing.
Interesting. I mean, actually, sort of talking about podcasts, there's a remarkable similarity, funnily enough, in that the technical problem in podcasting is called discoverability. So I've listened to a few podcasts for decades and they eventually sort of fade away and I want to listen to a new one. It's a right nightmare to find one I want to listen to because it's not so much about the content, it's actually almost like the style of it, you know? Something that tells me something fresh and interesting and all that kind of stuff. I'd much rather listen to a podcast on a topic I'm not that interested in that's a really good podcast than something that I'm interested in that's kind of, you know, a bit dull. And it's the same thing, which is by and large, I think it's entirely true that most people listen to new podcasts because somebody recommended it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Happens to me too.
Right. Excellent. Okay, so just wrapping up on the main course then, we're really sort of changing the definition of what the word physical means in terms of physical banking. In one perspective, you know, you're setting it up in a 21st century way, including some old-fashioned concepts like communities and human beings and all that kind of stuff, and you're offering something which is different from the others. You're also sort of an order of magnitude or two smaller in terms of the number of branches out there, so you don't have to cover the tens of thousands. And I like the idea that you stop seeing physical and digital, as it were, as alternatives. You have to be physical or digital, or physical with a little bit of digital. There's no reason that the two can't be seamless and complementary. And I take your point about the physical presence being really sort of very valuable. And I certainly didn't know, to my sins, maybe I should read stuff in newspapers after all, or on the interweb, all the fun things that you can do in your branches. As you can imagine, I've spoken to plenty of fintechs here and lots of them very proud that you can sort of sign up in 15 milliseconds to their service. That's true, and 15 milliseconds is pretty good going, really. But they then have to stick something in the post, which takes a while to come. And going back to what it was 20 years ago, when I went indie and needed a company, you know, there was me walking around in 1998, walking around Lindnall, trying to find a bank to actually go in and open up. And it took bloody ages, you know. And I'm always being told by people that just simple things like getting a bank account has proved really hard. I mean, the number of fintechs that pinged me over the last 4 years, saying, oh, Mike, we're finding it really hard to get a bank account. Years go by and I keep hearing the same thing. So I shall obviously have to say in the future, check out Metro Bank.
Yes, I mean, it's probably, you know, obviously I can't name names, but let's just say a large number of fintechs, including some fintech banks, are customers of Metro. Because we get accounts open very, very quickly, business accounts particularly, which, as you say, matters when you want to get up and running.
Yes, exactly. Especially when you're sort of a micro co or a startup or a small co, there's far too much stuff to be done. So if the sort of infrastructural requirements can be sort of ticked, that's good. Right. OK, well, that's really, really sexy. And I'm personally glad because it's one of the questions I never particularly have a good answer to when someone says, I'm having trouble getting a bank account. I shall send them all in your direction, Paul.
I'm very grateful.
Good. That'll be at least sort of one per annum. I'm not going to retire on the commission for that. Anyway, before we wrap up the show, I'd like, first of all, to thank all the listeners out there. I do appreciate you all, and I do appreciate hearing from you now and then. And occasionally some of you send me kind words, which is even better. And I'd also like to thank my brand partners for the podcast, Blue Motor Finance, who are, according to the 2018 FT1000, the fastest growing FS business in Europe. Blue's award-winning technology has supported over $1 billion of lending, working with over 3,700 UK motor retailers. Capital.com, making CFD trading more accessible and engaging in 23 languages. 500,000 downloads in 51 countries. Check out Capital.com or download the app. Trading is risky. Smart Pension, who are fast, secure and free. Check out their UK workplace pensions at autoenrollment.co.uk. So, as you've survived to the dessert course Paul, normally I say, do you want to chuck your breadcrumbs in the water? But we've already spoken about how you're wonderful and how everyone should join up Metro Bank if they can. You're just in the UK at the moment.
Just in the UK at the moment, yes.
Right. And so what shout-outs would you like to make about what you're up to and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, just to finish the discussion, don't believe that physical banking is over. It's very much here to stay. It's got to be good physical banking. We're opening our next store on the 20th of July in Southampton. So if you're in that neck of the woods, come and say hello. We've got about another 10 or so opening this year. Come in and say hello. We'd love to meet you.
And it's probably a commercial secret, so I won't ask the question, but I'm interested in the answer, if you know what I mean. So maybe if it is, then you can give me market figures. But just out of curiosity, let's say I as London FinTech Podcast, wish to open a branch in a major city of the UK. How much does that cost me per annum? Is it like $1 million per annum, or 10 million, or 100,000?
Not dodging the question, it very much depends on what high street, what location, what type of building and
you should have been
footage.
A lawyer, actually.
Yeah. I refer to footnote 7.
But ballpark, though.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, construction costs and rents, yeah, you can be talking millions of pounds a year, which is why, you know, for us, the way that we make that work is because we get more out of them because they're open longer. So, you know, this is not a small point. The productivity of stores matters if you're going to be paying that kind of cost. And, of course, our competitors that aren't open weekends and they're shut, you know, desperate to shut up at 4:30 or 5, they're not getting the return from those branches. So that's really the Metro Bank difference, really. If you're going to do physical really well.
Yes, do or do not, there is no try, as Yoda said before he became a social justice warrior. Good, yes, and I mean, it comes back to another thing that I think is very similar, is restaurants. You know, most of the day, especially out of central London, you walk past restaurants and they're shut, which means in the few hours they're open, they've got to pay the huge cost in those few hours, so the margins have to be high. I think I can see why you use the word store. It's a bit more like, I'm not being rude, but it's very good customer service. If you go to a supermarket, they're open 7 days a week, you know.
Internally, we call ourselves retailers. You know, we're professional bankers, but we're retailers. We think of ourselves as a retail business.
Excellent. Good. Okay, well, thank you for that, Paul. I've certainly learned not to look down at the physical world from my sort of digital ivory towers. And I'm certainly interested in hearing the story. I haven't heard specifically much about Metro Bank for some time, and clearly you're moving on in terms of business model, so half of your balance sheet is no longer just sort of bunged into investments, as it were, but actually you're becoming more conventional banking. You're still a more conservative bank than many of the others, and I like the idea that blending physical and digital is not just a good business ROI, but has benefits for society, which we all actually live in. So I wish you every success in that, and your charitable and Aspen Ventures, and I'd like to thank you because you kindly bought me a book called Naked Banking, which I ought to do a shout out. It's called The Truth About
Banking. Please do. Yeah. I need all the help I can get.
Yes, exactly. And so it was very kind. And then as I went on to moan about, which I shall now read because I need to learn something about banking. And I'm not actually joking because I was always a sort of merchant banker end of things rather than commercial high street banking. So I probably know less than I should do. I was also extremely jealous of the stage that you've got to, which is you're handing over a physical book as the theme is physical, because I'm roughly halfway through mine. And as I was saying, I'm at the stage of my book project where I was sort of thinking of shooting myself. I'm wishing I hadn't started. But
so we can agree that physical trumps virtual in this degree.
Physical trumps virtual. Yes, yes, exactly. But I'm pregnant at the moment, so I'd like to give birth to the physical, which hopefully, unlike children, once it's born, will take care of itself. So I wish you every success with those ventures, and I wish Metro Bank every success in the future. And folks in the UK, go and check them out and see whether they are better than everybody else. And if they are, tell all your mates. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks a lot, and good luck with the book.
Thanks for listening. If you have consulting, advisory/non-exec, or media needs in the FS or fintech space, get in touch with me at mike@londonfintechpodcast.com.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. Come away from the city, but with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. We are wild like the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight.